Our next speaker is Kathy Weeks. She goes here to the church and has been married for over 36 years and has 5 grown children and 2 grandchildren and loves them all so much. I didn't know Kathy before asking her to speak, and just that pours through. Your love for your children and grandchildren just pours through. Over the years, a fun fact, she has possessed more pets than she's willing to admit in public. And she works over at the Assist Pregnancy Center as their Director of Client Services. She's starting her 3rd year there. She enjoys making, I had to look up the pronunciation, suet cakes for her backyard birds. I don't know what they are, but I know how to say it now. And she flat refuses, I like how she worded that, flat refuses to quit the choir, and attributes her music and being in the choir to helping her keep her sanity. But she loves music, her birds, her children, encouraging those who are hurting, and Jesus. Not in that order, though. But anyway, Kathy, please come up and welcome her.
I'm easily distracted, and I am PowerPoint impaired, so my apologies to you who are other than auditorially oriented. I need to read most of this, because if I stick with the script, I might finish on time, and if I don't, I'm gone. I'll never rein it back in. Mothering is a noble calling. It opens our hearts wide to love more deeply than we ever thought possible, and it leads us to be willing to sacrifice ourselves for an other with great needs. The inherent struggle with this focus on other is that sometimes we lose some of ourselves in the day-to-day efforts. Unchecked, we risk demoting our own genuine needs to wants and elevating the wants, our children's wants, to needs. But our children have a vested interest in us taking good care of ourselves, because we're better mamas when we do. When we are whole and rested, we are so much more able to live lives that demonstrate to them how to be content even when things are tough, how to choose important over urgent, best over good. And they learn best by watching us. In that case, what would self-care look like? More specifically, what would soul self-care look like? How we maintain health in the part of us that makes us truly human. Well, in keeping with your themes this year, I suggest it might look a lot like resting and feasting. Resting is more than sleep. Yes, as you know, sleep is critical, particularly when you don't get it. But I'm talking about resting with God and in God, feeling restored in the eternal part of yourself by connecting with the Eternal One, and listening to Him communicate His steadfast, loving kindness to you. Let me find myself. And feasting would be that lavish feeding of our souls by working regular infusions of joy into our lives. Jesus came that we might have abundant life. This means deliberately feeding our sense of well-being, growing our capacity to thrive regardless of our circumstances, to experience life fully and live ready to celebrate. I can only share with you what I have received, so I want to share some of my story to tell you how God has been confronting me in these areas to encourage balance and health. As you heard, I have 5 kiddos, now mercifully grown up and still breathing, last I heard. I still know their names only about half the time, so we have a rule: if I'm looking at you, I'm talking to you, even if I used your sib's name. Feasting on joy seemed to come naturally with my kids, especially when they were young. Our home was so noisy and active. Holy cow, Batman. I, being an extrovert with ADD, loved that, even in large doses. I loved moving homeschool to Huntley Meadows for the day or to the beach. I looked for ways to celebrate silly things, like when we were running low on food and shopping with five kids was out of the question for some reason. Maybe the paycheck wasn't scheduled to land in the bank for a couple of days or one of the kids was sick. At these times, we would throw a Sesame Street-inspired meal with whatever was left in the cabinet. Like, this meal is brought to you by the color yellow. It looked deliberate. Or the letter P. Because no matter what else we didn't have in the cupboards, we always seemed to have items in those categories. I mean, if you think about it, yellow includes a ton of kid-friendly foods, like scrambled eggs and applesauce and buttered toast and bananas and lemonade and pea foods, pancakes, peanut butter, pickles, popcorn. You put all that on the table and the kids think they've died and gone to heaven. So these were fun meals for them and for me. There was no pressure, many giggles, and an excuse to be playful with our food and silly with one another. We also had a homeschool PE unit on the cha-cha one winter. I taught them the basic steps first. Then the radio would be left playing softly in the background while we did school stuff. And every time David Sanborn's Bang Bang, which was a very popular song at that point, came on, we'd drop everything, mandatory, and go dance the cha-cha in the room with the stereo. I also had a nursing baby, so not infrequently, I'd be dancing the cha-cha with the baby in the football hold with my children. So it was not pretty, but that's okay. Was 3 minutes of crazy physical activity, totally fun. And these are kinds of mini feasts of joy that you can add spontaneously to nourish yourself and your kids, inside and out, making memories that stick as a family treasure. These little events have the extravagant air of spontaneous celebration for no reason except love of being together. Another example, our fifth child was born December 28th. He was born with stuff, activities, companionship, animals. He really needed nothing. So, what to give a two-year-old 3 days after Christmas? My husband Larry went to the party store and for $20 he bought a helium tank and tons of balloons. For months, Peter could have new balloons to play with any time he wanted. At first, I was so jealous I hadn't thought of this idea, this stroke of genius. Now I totally admire that he came up with this. But as you can imagine, it wasn't all fun. It was clear from the get-go that my kids were not exactly like everyone else's. My firstborn had all the skills required of a kindergartner well before he began that year in public school, and yet he failed that grade. Furthermore, the child the teacher described at school was not the one I lived with at home. It didn't make sense. So in an attempt to better understand what was going on with my family, we began homeschooling that fall, 2 weeks after number three was born. And they all know I use numbers. So I felt I needed more time with them to learn who they are and to see each one's unique needs, gifts, and struggles. What was revealed over the next decade was that three of my ultimate brood of five had some combination of learning disabilities, sensory sensitivities, and varieties of bipolar disorder, as does my husband. The other two just had their mother's vanilla ADHD with or without the H. Now, trying to wrangle an education into these particular children of mine was a monumental task. Over the course of 12 years, we homeschooled varying subsets of our tribe with excellent results. They all transitioned to public or private schools with ease and ahead academically. However, I slept at most 6 hours per night for more than a decade. There seemed to be no other way to get everything done. The biggest cost of caring poorly for myself was to my relationships, with God, myself, and everyone else. My exhaustion and busyness made me feel disconnected. It was almost all energy out, steadily depleting me. One particularly tough day with all five kiddos, I felt overwhelmed and discouraged, outnumbered, and very angry with God about all this. Okay, I was probably ovulating, or the planets were aligned or something, but I put me in timeout. First, I administered the requisite fear of God by threatening the kids that they had better not so much as even think about doing anything that would make me any angrier than I already was. Then I stormed out into the yard, stomping across the lawn and giving full verbal vent to every single thing I was thinking. I yelled at God, "Why did you give me these kids? I can't do this. I can't. This is too much." Heavy sigh, I dropped my head and notice that I am standing in a patch of clover. Wait, these are four-leaf clovers. The entire patch, except for a few five- and six-leaf clovers. Epiphany. I get it, God. Thank you. Nothing about my circumstances changed that day, just my perspective. In an instant, God reframed it. Three-leaf clovers are so ordinary. A four-leaf clover is a genetic aberration. Not normal, rare, and lucky. My kiddos' issues are not normal. They are genetic chemical aberrations. I had a house full of four, five, and six-leaf clovers. In that moment, I realized these children and their struggles are not a trial in God's eyes inflicted on me, but an enormous blessing gifted to me personally. I picked a big old bunch of these clovers, and I brought them in and put them in a short vase on the table. Clunk. Then I shared with my still scared, quiet children how God told me he sees them. And none has forgotten that lesson. It appeared in an essay my daughter wrote last year while completing her graduate degree in special ed, to which she feels called because of her upbringing. God humbled me that day, and many others since. I have consistently maintained one deeply restorative practice. For 28 years, the worship ministry here has been the one place where I'm just Kathy for a couple hours at a stretch. I'm not a mom, wife, daughter, nothing else. Choir asks only that I be there and know my music. Stresses are suspended for those minutes while I sing, so music is, to me, feasting, where my senses are filled, soothed, and delighted. It is an identification and connection with those in choir and orchestra as we pursue a corporate goal of leading the congregation on Sundays. It is a connection with the innermost part of me as I give physical expression to songs with form and beauty. And when I worship with abandon, it connects my eternal self with the eternal I am. Do you have things that effectively refill your energy tank? Like experiencing beauty, movement, creativity. These are elements of feasting for your soul, things that pour back into you and bless you deeply, maybe in ways you can't even put words to. These things help you to do more than survive. They make you thrive. Well, singing allowed me to appear up there in choir like everything in my life must be okay, because in those moments, it was. Inside, though, cracks were forming where I lived like radar, perpetually scanning ahead 2 weeks preparing for the worst and back 2 weeks doing damage control and cleanup. As the kids got older, their issues morphed but didn't go away. In altercations between children, I realize now I often focused on the perp, leaving the victim to just deal with it, and collateral damage accumulated on all fronts. So God provided yet another layer of support, the High Moms prayer groups, one of the, which probably doesn't happen here anymore, but our group is still going. We just changed our name. One of the original leaders, Pam Sanders, just happened to know numerous women's stories, so she wisely shepherded some of us with exceptionally and chronically difficult situations into one group by saying, "You want this group?" What a huge blessing to me. Finally, there were other women who fully understood my life, how hard I was trying, and they didn't offer me another Dobson book. We networked, sharing names of professionals experienced in the areas with which our children needed help. We each still had to carry our own loads and raise our own children, yes, but we shared one another's burdens, demonstrating with our words, deeds, and lives that each of us would get through this with God as our faithful, gentle, and generous guardian and guide. And I did what I dared not do before. I began to get away. Our group left for weekends together at least once a year. That was a mandatory minimum. Someone had a timeshare connection, and we'd carpool, pile into a couple condos for a few days. And an amazing thing happened. My family survived without me for short periods of time. The wings did not fall off, and no one died. I would leave on these weekends feeling so discouraged and exhausted, wishing secretly that we could just keep driving and never come back. Though returning to a house that looked like the wreck of the Hesperus, I also came back refreshed, hopeful, and with new ideas to try and renewed love for my family. This was rest and feasting. As you can imagine, though, we didn't spend our precious time together sleeping, though one could nap if they wanted. We played cards, prayed, brought books for one another to scan through, went for walks, massages, hot tubbing, snow tubing. We brought movies and way more food than needed for 3 days. Mostly, we made one another laugh until our stomachs and faces hurt. You know where you do this when you're laughing because it hurts so bad. We spent time enjoying, literally putting joy into each other. Being together was literally filling all aspects of ourselves with joy. You need this as much as I did. So find the courage, make a way to experience this if you aren't already, especially if you are a mother of a child with special needs. You can get away. Start a small group. It will make you a better mom. It will make you a better human, I promise. But those kids of mine, they weren't the only reason I worked long hours. I grew up believing my job was to keep everyone happy. I was raised in a clan of pastors where extended family is a ready source of support for church work. I loved Jesus and his church, the culture, the people, the music, the message. But somewhere in there, I came to believe that serving was the basis for my worth. I do, therefore I am. Larry has threatened to have engraved on my tombstone the phrase, "It was a good day. I got a lot done." If some work was good, more was better. My kids will tell you my favorite number is all. If you start the job, you finish it, and you leave things better than you found them. I have the work ethic and determination of a chief master sergeant. Do you hear that rest is not my forte? I am well aware that I'm going to have some squirrely grandkids along the way, and I want to, I mean literally, they're like zinging off the walls, and I want to be prepared to come alongside my daughters-in-law effectively. So starting while 5 kids were still at home, and on top of all the aforementioned activities, I began a master's program in clinical social work in my ongoing efforts to understand and support my children's well-being. Oh, due to a congenitally anomalous hip joint, I had a full hip replacement right in the middle of all of that. During the 5 years it took to finish that degree, I found the only time to complete my schoolwork uninterrupted was during the night. So I pulled one all-nighter each week, usually Monday, and upped my caffeine and my coffee intake to 2 pots per day to avoid falling asleep at stoplights. If you think I talk fast now. There was no time to make up this additional sleep loss. There was no time, period. Furious activity had become my drug of choice for decades, my anesthesia. It's the classic case of the frog in a beaker of water on a burner with the heat slowly being turned up under it. The frog acclimates to the heat until it's cooked alive, and I was living totally on the edge, physically, emotionally, spiritually, socially, mentally. But few here at church would have known that, as apparently neither did I. Enter my merciful, faithful, passionate, pursuing God. I graduated in May of 2007, 1 month before number two son married his college sweetheart. The kids gave me a Shih Tzu puppy from my graduation, my favorite breed, because our house was now down to only 3 kids, 2 cats, 1 rabbit, and a leopard gecko. How boring. We all sat together one Sunday morning and passed a pad of paper, I'm sorry, don't listen to this part, up and down the pew, adding and crossing off names. Yes, this is during the church service, until we came up with something everyone could agree on. The family in the pew behind us, by the way, added the name of that morning's missionary, Lomax, to the list, and it became part of the legend. Our puppy's name is Buckaroo Bear Lomax Harley Weeks. We call him Boo. In August of 2007, as a UPS package was being delivered to our front door, Boo escaped and ran as fast as his stubby little puppy legs could carry him. Well, we live on a very busy street, so reasonably recognizing the imminent danger of dog death and devastation, I leaped off the front stoop into Boo's path. Landing on that drought-baked clay, I heard and felt a pop in my foot. It was pretty painful, but nothing was visibly changed, so I nabbed the dog and limped back into the house. Being rather tolerant of chaos of any kind, I didn't think it was that bad. I'm fine, really. My foot slowly prolapsed over the next 2 months until my little toe was no longer touching the ground, and I was walking on the inside of my ankle. Only then did I think to make an appointment with a surgeon. And he had a 3-month waiting list for new patients. He explained I had severely ruptured the posterior tibial tendon, the one responsible for holding my foot upright. Surgery was scheduled. Then we changed our family's insurance policy to one with better mental health benefits, requiring rescheduling to a different hospital. The first surgery would now be 7 full months after the initial injury. That was the first of 13 surgeries over 6 years, all with mixed results. I was sent to other specialists to discern if there was some underlying medical condition that precluded full bone fusion. They found absolutely nothing. The surgeons were baffled that what should work didn't, and where they expected to have problems, things mended beautifully. 2 major failures happened. The first was an autoimmune reaction to a substance used. Rheumatoid arthritis attacked that substance, and many of my joints, including those in my feet, ankles, shoulders, and sternum. The next surgery included removing that substance to stop the reaction. But the damage to my ankles meant an ankle replacement was now added to the list of remaining surgeries. Then, ordinary skin staff was introduced into my tibia during that ankle replacement. 6 years of casts and crutches, pain meds and bed rest, elevating my foot, a PICC line, cement blocks in my ankle, a spike attaching my foot to my leg. It was like dominoes. Every attempted solution hurt more than it helped. Until the amputation, February 11th, 2014. That one healed so far ahead of schedule, the surgeon was confused about when that surgery must have happened. In 6 weeks, I was walking pain-free in a prosthesis with next to no limp. and I can stand here now in no pain. My conclusion: God simply withheld his hand of physical healing in my life while he cleared my calendar and forced me to rest. In the text from which Jesse preached one of those Sunday mornings during all of this was Psalm 119:75. The last part of that verse reads, "In faithfulness you have afflicted me." And that, at that moment, I fully understood that this wounding was completely in God's control, meaning I could trust him with this. I had overworked myself long enough, and God demanded I take a Leviticus 25 Jubilee rest from calling back to Jesus over my shoulder, urging him to forward his resources up to the front lines where he was really going to like what I was doing. My Father, my Heavenly Father, had deeper healing to accomplish than my foot. So I now had become the star of my own private reality soul makeover show. There were so many things that I had not attended to within me. But God was loving me now in a Hebrews 12 discipline kind of way. Mind you, I've known and loved Jesus since I was 5. I could acknowledge that my loving Father had supplied all my needs. And I had my Bible study and choir, so I had compassionate fellowship and soul food. And all those years that I worked so hard, God did not refuse my work offerings. In Luke 10, when Martha complained to Jesus that her sister Mary was not helping her prepare the food for the guests, which included Jesus, Jesus did not fuss at Martha. He did not refuse Martha's hospitality, nor did he shame her. Jesus simply said Mary had chosen better, and this would not be taken from her. Hospitality was Martha's gift. God made her that way, and he loved that about her. But Mary was experiencing what she needed: time, listening to her Lord face to face, something she would lose soon enough. Prior to my orthopedic surgery hobby, I had not done this. Spending unhurried times just listening to my God, resting my soul in him. During one of those periods of time stuck in bed, I read 2 Samuel 7:18, that David entered the tent and sat to talk with God. Wait, I hadn't remembered anyone sitting before God in the Old Testament. That's like so irreverent. So I blurted out, "God, how did he just walk in there and sit to talk to you?" And God whispered, "Like you are now?" My God loved it that I would now sit for hours in his presence and read my Bible, waiting for the Holy Spirit to teach me who I truly was in Christ. Funny thing is, in God's amazing grace, he had given me a stump verse in 2007 before he ever gave me the stump 7 years later. In Buddy Wood's Cancer Toolkit, there was one weird stick-out verse that I asked Buddy to explain to me, Isaiah 11:1. "A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse, and from his roots a branch will bear fruit." "Buddy, why is this verse on this list?" Buddy's answer started something like this: "Oh, Kathy, that is the most exciting verse in the whole list." Do I have that right, Penny? "That's a prophetic verse about Jesus Christ, the coming Messiah. He told me that God would restore the kingship of Israel to the lineage of David by resurrecting Jesus Christ from the dead. And that because Jesus rose from the dead, Buddy would also." He was totally psyched about this. Oh, the kindness and sense of humor of our generous God, that he would give me that voice in that verse in Buddy's voice before I even needed it, infused with hope. This spring, when work was canceled one day for snow, I went and got my stump verse tattooed on my stump. just the reference, and I can't show you because I forgot to wear a skirt. It's way up high. I'm not dropping my pants, sorry. That was painful enough, though, that I think it's out of my system now. But I love it. It says God brings life from death. I literally have 1 foot in the grave. But I'm going to see that foot again. This is a temporary loss. Another lesson. I read Zephaniah 3:17. And then I looked it up in every available English translation, since that's the only language I read. And later had the reference penned on my foot, which you can't see because I have a shoe on. In the 1984 NIV, it reads, "The Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He will take great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love. He will rejoice over you with singing." Okay, I confess, I have a thing for brown-eyed tenors, like Stevie Wonder and Josh Groban. And so I believe Jesus is definitely a brown-eyed tenor. And this verse describes him as this cosmic sword-wielding, wild hair-flowing, okay, in my imagination, love song-singing opera star. So the next time I was driving in my car, still stunned by this thought, I wondered out loud, "What would you sing over me, Jesus?" The next song on the radio was Mercy Me's Beautiful. These words made me weep. You are treasured. You are sacred. You are His. You're beautiful. Jesus had quieted my life out of His passion for me and was singing to my heart that He loved me, not based on anything I could ever accomplish for Him. Just me, Kathy. And I felt lavishly loved to the core of my being. Then God began to show me one at a time people I did not love that way. He brought to mind any number of people, and with one I was calculated, and another manipulative. I was guarded with this one and had strings attached to my love for that one. I loved so poorly compared to how He loves me. Through all those surgeries, friends in this congregation blessed my socks off. Well, my sock. My Bible study group moved to my house for a few years so I could attend no matter how drugged I was. They came and cleaned my house ahead of time so I wouldn't be ashamed. And one of the books we studied together was Lewis Mead's Forgive and Forget. The book is great. We hated the title, so we put stickers over the "and forget" part. Actually, I led that study. So piously, I opened my mind to God and asked, "Oh, Father, show me who might I have forgotten to forgive." And over the next 24 hours, He brought to mind 10 people, the memory of each curling my lip. God answered my prayer by giving me a list of fellow believers over whom I presumed to sit in judgment. And now I had to forgive them. This was a benefit, both of being in a group who nurtured my character growth and of making myself quiet and ready to hear God's thoughts, of my resting my head on His chest. Still other blessings. Family came and walked my boo, whom I still have. One sweet friend with young children called for years before her grocery store excursions. She asked what we needed and took it to her house till Larry could go get it. What a lavish gift. Some of you brought meals following multiple surgeries. You sent cards and emails of encouragement, and I was thoroughly amazed and sustained by the outpouring of love over my family and me. Again and again, I learned I don't earn God's love. He lavishes on me, and it pleases Him to do so. I just need to rest in that. Now, as a person who was used to doing for others, This receiving thing was hard to accept, and it surprised me to recognize my pride being addressed in this way. Being in a position of needing help from others is humbling, but the scriptures are chock full of reminders that this position of humility, not humiliation, is the very one from which he accomplishes the most in and through us. In our weakness, he is strong. We cannot outgive God. So we must learn to accept from him too and humbly admit our eternal indebtedness to our infinite God. Then gracious acceptance of love offered in any form engenders deep gratitude, and in turn, gratitude completes the circle and produces heartfelt generosity, one that enjoys giving back to others. In June 2013, while sitting in bed recovering, I wrote this in my gratitude journal from John 14. Jesus desires that I obey him out of love and gratitude for what he has done, instead of out of fear of consequences or my reputation. Obedience for any reason is in my best interest and affords me protections I can't fully understand, but obedience out of love, that makes him smile. That means I get it, that he is for me. It demonstrates that I trust in his goodness, his heart that desires my very best, my deepest healing. When I offer obedience and gratitude and love, desiring to please him, he is pleased by my sweet-smelling offering. Even now, God continues nudging me along the steep growth trajectory begun in 2007. And at the end of the surgeries, a job was awaiting me that I had not anticipated, not even thought of. Crashing Anna McCormick's 90th birthday party in the atrium, I sat next to Jane Fuller, then executive director of Assist. After catching one another up on our lives, because we hadn't seen each other in 10 years, through the entire event, she sensed the leading of the Holy Spirit and asked me to prayerfully consider joining their team. I now work there as director of client services, and I could not have done this job had God not quieted me with his love and failed to discipline me as in Hebrews 12. My character needed to have an overhaul. And I believe God's lesson for me now is to learn to breathe Christ in and breathe Christ out. He wants me to build on what I've learned until I live with him seamlessly. 2 years ago, for my daughter-in-law's baby shower, I was asked to write a letter to be included in a book for her. I could not have written this to my children with such confidence were it not for God, all God had brought me through. I firmly believe everything in my life has passed through his loving hands, and his fingerprints are all over my story. So in closing, I will personalize the letter I wrote to them for you. My dearest mothers of preschoolers, I am so pleased for you that the Lord, our Lord, has blessed you with children. I pray now for you for wisdom, protection, and provision, that you would find favor in the eyes of those he has placed over you, for opportunities to serve and grow in grace and the fruit of the Spirit, for daily evidences of God's steadfast loving kindness, and for his powerful, peaceful presence to cover each of you and fill your homes. Among the many things you will teach your children, do also teach them to sing praise to our God. When they sing of him, they are mighty warriors against the powers of darkness. Psalm 8:2 says, from the lips of children and infants you have ordained praise because of your enemies, to silence the foe and the avenger. Evil is actually silenced by praise from the mouths of young children. God deliberately confounds the wise of this world by demonstrating his strength through those we deem weakest, because his ways are higher than our ways. So know that God chose your children for you, for your benefit as well as theirs. The loving examples of your lives will make a difference for all eternity. Dear ones, you are treasured. You are sacred. You are His. And you're beautiful. With much love and gratitude that you would allow me to share tonight. Kathy.